Okay, we've got Amy and Christy, I think, that are going to join us. But Sue, Martin, and Alan, you're going to take the lead on the introduction. I'm not quite sure who's doing that. Alan?
I think it's me, because we haven't talked about it. Christy certainly passed it over to me.
Didn't she do?
Yeah. Just going to get a little bit of background. I think you've all got copies of our feedback statement on the disclosure activities and what we plan to do. I just thought of very brief overview of what we're planning. So there are sort of four major initiatives that we have. As you know, we had this public forum back in January. We had 120 or so people there. I think it was a very effective forum. It was great to get so many different types of people in the room at once. But of course, what people want to see is some actions out of it. And we published a feedback statement a few weeks ago and outlined several steps we're going to take. Now, the short-term thing, which is what we're going to focus on today in our breakout sessions, is some immediate changes to IS1. And to give you a flavour, and this is one we're not asking for feedback on, I see IS1 as being a little bit restrictive in some cases. And I was a bit surprised when Russell Pico made the statement saying IS1 prevents us from, for example, moving our accounting policies to the back of the financial statements. I might disagree with them because it's not that prescriptive. But you read IS1 and it says that in presenting the notes to the financial statements, the normal order of presentation is as follows, A, accounting policies, B, and I think it's explanatory notes presented in the same order as the items are presented in the financial statements, C, and so on. So, you know, you have to persuade your auditors that you want to do something that's not normal by moving things. And we can't see any need to be so restrictive. If it gives people an excuse or encourages boilerplate accounting, then we want to take that excuse away. So we are going to have a package of changes that we're going to start to bring in September, October. It'll either be a really big package in October or two packages in September, one in October. We're going to propose probably about 6 or 7 amendments to IS1 that we hope will start to address the relatively small amendments in themselves, but we hope the psychological effect is actually more dramatic than that, because it will actually refocus the debates about materiality, and it will actually loosen up some of the restrictions that are potentially in IS1 and allow us to move away from compliance to communication. That's the idea. So that's one set of steps. At the same time, we're about to launch a little group to look at materiality. We're going to be looking at it, but we've also already had discussions with the IAASB. They still have to go through their processes, and we're talking to the securities regulators because we want to get a shared solution for materiality. And at the moment, one of the possibilities is that we will investigate developing either application guidance or education material to help explain more about how you apply materiality. I think it's going to be a bit tricky because we know, this is part of our project plan, we know that in the US, for example, there's a Supreme Court ruling on what material means. That must affect financial reporting. We know that the auditing literature contains some guidance which is going to affect the auditors. We need to bring all that out and understand what it is that's driving behaviour in terms of materiality so that the auditors don't have a particular way of dealing with it, and it conflicts in a way with what the board sets when it actually sets the standards. So that's something that is, again, short term. We've started to put the project plan together. We've put the wheels in motion to get the securities regulators and the auditors involved. And one of the ideas is that we'll put together a research paper on that and potentially run some round tables to get much more involved in that. And again, that's something we're starting to do now. Then we hit the medium term and longer term. We are going to, fairly loose words in describing this, we're going to blow the dust off the financial statement presentation project. And there's a lot of really good thinking went on in that. You know, the conceptual framework's only going to have some guidance on disclosure, some principles, but we think that, using my words, we need to replace IS1, which really tells you the shape of the financial statements, and IS7, which is a cash flow statement. They're in separate documents, no reason they need to be. And IS8, which tells you about a lot about comparability, changes in policies and so on. I can see that being a nice cohesive package, and probably IFRS 5 actually with discontinued ops. Having one package, we can loosely call that a disclosure framework in a sense, because it tells you what the general shape of financial statements should be like. We're going to start to do the research on that beginning this year. It's not going to be racing out to get an ED out in the next 18 months or so, but the idea would be to put in together a nice research proposal. It would then take, I think, to our next agenda consultation, so that once we finish the conceptual framework, we're pretty much ready to go. And coupled with that, we will have a systematic review of all the disclosure requirements in our standards. And the Advisory Council, some members asked us yesterday, a couple of days ago, to also have a look at whether there are conflicts between other regulatory reporting requirements that would be nice to get rid of. It's harder because in the US you can do it between, say, the SEC and FASB, but we work in a very global environment, so but at least identify whether there are conflicts. And the other issues you're going to start to deal with in here, because some of the amendments and some of the thinking is that we want to do change the way we express our requirements for disclosure. One of the groups we're looking at today is that we write some pretty reasonable objectives for our disclosure requirements, and then people tell us we spoil it by saying in meeting this objective an entity shall, and then we have a list of what you have to disclose, and it comes across as being a bit prescriptive. So we're toying with the idea of changing the way we write that. One of the suggestions is to say, in meeting this objective, make sure it's a nice clear objective, the type of information an entity should consider disclosing is as follows, and potentially actually have a longer list. And the longer list might deliberately have some overlaps in it. So you can't treat it as a checklist, because they could be, you show some alternative ways of presenting information. And so you provide what I would call a smorgasbord, or a list, which might help enhance comparability, because at least you've got a list in a sense, for want of a better term. But it's also deliberately one that you can't sit there and tick them off, because they are complementary disclosures in some cases. But that's a really interesting and challenging one, which is why it's on here today. Because we want to understand whether that's going to help users, that whether you think that would enhance comparability, or because we have some deliberate overlaps, actually disrupt comparability, and could preparers work with it. If we were less prescriptive in a sense, we've got some feedback from auditors that they like lists because it gives them something to anchor against. So that's the sort of thing we're looking at as well in the short term, much slightly different and modified drafting. Because there are little things like an IS-1, you don't have to disclose something that's not material, but people tell us that a very general statement saying you don't have to, it's not material, it's very hard to then balance that against a very specific requirement in a standard that says an entity shall. And so say, how do I really put that materiality overlay over such clear language in the standard? So we'll have a look at that as well. An interesting IFRS 3, the business combination standard, is one that we've had quite a bit of strong feedback on, that saying nice objectives, but you've got this big long list. And I think our post-implementation review will have a look at that as part of that. So,
can I make it? I don't want to sound condescending, Alan, when I say this, but I turned up back in January, and to be honest, I spoke to some people afterwards, and we thought it was going to be a bit of a dance squib and no follow on. And then lo and behold, this document got produced recently. So, as I said, I don't want to sound condescending, but I think that's an excellent summary that you put together in a relatively short space of time. So, congratulations to the team, from my side, on putting it together.
Any points for clarification for Alan? Any comments for you? Osman, sorry.
I think I was quite interested in what you said, Alan, about the changes to IS-1, and you gave the example of accounting policies and making it more clear that you could put them anywhere. And that causes me concern on two points, actually. One is that's not really the answer. I think the accounting policies are boilerplate, and moving them somewhere else doesn't quite solve the problem of boilerplate. So really, it's easy for me to say as a user, but companies should be more bold in kind of focusing those policies. Personally, I don't think they should be moved off the financial statements. I think they should be focused and reduced. The other thing that concerned me is the user views that I'm reflecting are the user views of analysts that look through financial information and need to look through it relatively quickly, particularly the year-end financials. And one thing that they really appreciate, which they don't see enough of in IFRS, is a consistent format and a consistent style of disclosure. And reducing boilerplate is great, but I wonder whether making the presentation style more flexible is reflecting what users are saying that they need. They need something that they can understand and have a greater level of comparability on. And the European analysts that I speak to look with some jealousy to the US analysts who look at the SEC reports, because they say at least it's very voluminous, but you know where to find stuff because it's the same format every year. And I think that's becoming more and more of an issue as financial statements become more fulsome, which I don't think is a bad thing. But I think you need a tool to be able to pick up a set of financial statements and find relatively quickly what you're looking for. So I'm not convinced that loosening IS1 in the way that you're saying is meeting user needs.
I was going to suggest, rather than start the discussion here, that we go to the breakout sessions a bit earlier, come back 50 minutes earlier. But if you want to, yeah, that's where my ask, yeah. So first, Martin and Sue, you want to...
Yeah, I think we were just going to mention a couple of other initiatives that are sort of around this area and hopefully give some encouragement for what's done in the little rooms while we talk through to Mark.
Yeah, well, Eumedion is an organization I work for, a foundation. We have an active dialogue with the largest listed companies in the Netherlands. And if there's one thing that struck us on this subject, it's basically all stakeholders feel there's something to gain here. Yeah, the users think it could be improved, but the preparers as well. Preparers look at it as, why is this such a large part of our financial statements? And if you can cut the clutter out there, that would be valuable for everyone. And I think there is scope for that. And we asked the Dutch listed companies in a letter, well, please explore ways to cut the clutter. And we immediately got the message back, well, we don't think regulator will allow us. So we sent a joint letter together with the Confederation of Employers to the regulatory body, the AFM, and they sent a letter back, well, please use the freedom to explore the options to reduce this paragraph, and we will not be going sifting through if everything that's not really material is still in there. So that was a very constructive stance, but still there were no criteria. And what we want to do in the workshop is to show you 6 criteria in a presentation format that we've developed, to see whether that those make sense, and maybe they can be of inspiration to the ISB as well, to develop the standard and to really make it as concise and communicative paragraph as it at the moment is not. And so that's something that what we would like to do. It's not the only initiative, and Sue can maybe explore some other ideas.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch base on some work that we're doing at the FRC, and this is in the context of the Financial Reporting Lab. And the lab has been set up to bring companies together with investors to figure out better ways of reporting effectively. And some of this would be within the current requirements, and some of this may sort of press ahead into the future of reporting. We're going to try to get more ambitious in pressing ahead. But we've been doing quite a bit of work with companies and investors. The point is, we are facilitating. As the FRC, it is a regulator. It regulates the compliance, for example, with the accounting requirements for UK companies. That would be IFRS for those that are listed companies. But this is a different sort of initiative. It's a facilitation between the companies and the investors. We've done quite a bit of work on debt reporting. net debt reconciliations, which is one of the topics that will be touched on today in the breakout. We're about to do some work on accounting policy disclosure, exploring a range of things on that topic. But I think we've been getting some fairly clear messages in simple changes in reporting that can actually make a large difference. So, Alan, you were describing simple changes in the standards that you think will have a bigger impact than the simple change might imply. I think there's a lot of simple things that can also be done within the context of current standards and requirements. I mean, some of this relates to linking information, which is helpful to analysts, using clear and consistent language. It all sounds like very basic stuff, and everybody thinks they're doing it, but actually when the accounts are picked through quickly by analysts, sometimes you find out things aren't as clear, and inconsistency in language between a table in one section of the report versus language you see elsewhere. It gives you pause. You wonder what's going on. It's not maybe intentional inconsistency, but inconsistency nonetheless. So we've tried to tease out some sort of general messages from the more detailed work on these topics. All of the reports from the lab and just working with over time now, we've been going for about a year and a half. We've had 50 companies working with us, and I think 35 or so investment organizations. But we do touch base with a whole range of investors and analysts that review accounts in detail in this. So we've got a good base of information, and I think some of these general messages will help the IASB as well as we move forward. I mentioned we're going to talk about accounting policy disclosures. In the lab, we are going to be looking at the type of language, making, you know, is it important to make clear the changes and the choices that companies are making. We'll look at the presentational issues, and I think UK companies have been a bit at the forefront in terms of moving some of the policy disclosures, rewriting them usually when they go and then move them into the notes to which they relate, or sometimes they're shifting ones that they feel are less material to a sort of a back section, almost an appendix within the financial statements. And, you know, that's a bit edgy. You know, could those just go if they're actually less material? Maybe that's what should happen longer term. Certainly we'll be touching on the footnote order issue and whether that has to be rigidly conforming and walking down the statements. I think that generally tends to fall apart anyway as you get further down the financial statements. It doesn't always follow that neat order, but I think, Osman, it's going to be important in the discussions today and in the work that's done to gather further evidence outside of today to take all these, the range of views into account. I think the best outcome today would be that we all agree and the IASB has clear answers on issues that may be unrealistic. I suppose there's a middle ground where we don't agree. We agree on some things and we find some points that we disagree. But I think one thing I would suggest, and this is through all this work that I've done personally with companies and investors and trying to find better answers, that the worst outcome would be that we actually haven't understood each other on points. We don't know what the investors and analysts are asking for. We don't know what the problem is from a company standpoint. And then we don't know if we agreed or didn't agree. So I think I'd encourage you to really focus in the discussions on what is being asked for, what the issues may be in preparing the information in that way. And if there seems to be disagreement, do we really understand why the positions are being held, and we may find that with a few more minutes of discussion we can come to a better understanding, and then we at least know if we agree or disagree. And I've seen this work fantastically both in the lab and in this very forum and in prior years. I remember one meeting where we were talking about performance reporting. We talked about the cash flow statement, and there's all this sort of clouding in the air about who's wanting direct cash flow statements or indirect and all this sort of thing. And it took about 10 minutes, but we actually, I think relatively quickly in essence, because we were really trying hard to understand each other. And there was a light bulb moment where, and I won't attribute it particularly, but it was one of your group, Malcolm, who said, cash flow statement. You just want a bit more of our workings so you understand the working capital drivers of why operating profits differ from operating cash flows. And it's that sort of tangible, really understanding what's being asked for and then the why, in terms of we were trying to understand the drivers of that difference. Why? Because earnings are used quite a bit in analysis to forecast cash flows, and maybe that's, you would say that's inappropriate, but it's a proxy for us, so we really need to know why operating profits differ from operating cash flows. Simple solution, teasing out the differences quite clearly and explaining them so we can understand, but focusing on the what and the why, I think, could really yield some nice outcomes of clarity for the ISB.
Okay, good. Should we move to the breakouts? I think, CK, you've got one little change to make.
Yeah, actually, it's supposed to be two, but thanks to Russell just joining us, so it's just one. May I request Vago to move to breakout group number two, so that we have to balance the thing. It's not here, but otherwise, everybody stays with their assigned names.
So,
done here.
Where do we find the group room? So, there should be a list of groups. So, we've got five questions in the paper. I would encourage you to try and get to all five. I'm particularly interested in your views on the last one, so, which was the point that Alan was making about how we write disclosure requirements. So, see if you can get to that. Should we stick with the same timing?
Yeah. I think we have to save 10 minutes.
We've got an extra 10 minutes in here. Okay, we're allocating topics, are we, to individuals? Where does it say that?
So topic one will go to breakout group one, topic two will go to...
Okay.
But if you have time...
Well, as we've got an extra 10 minutes, why don't we why don't you start off with the one that's been allocated to you, topics 1, 2, and 3 for groups 1, 2, and 3. Start off with your appropriate one, but then extend it to the others if you have time.
And we'll meet back at 11:15.
And 11:15 sharp, as we've got some extra time. Let's try and get back here. Right. Coffee is in the room, so people that are staying in this room, go and grab a coffee over there, and we'll start in a few minutes.
Group three, I'll bring up group three downstairs. We have to have a path.
Amy? Yeah, so I got to those set down.
I think you probably. No, I think we need to leave the mic. So
does everyone in breakout group two know where the St. Paul's room is?
No.
Well, you can follow me then.
Yeah. I'll follow Christie's over there.
Turn them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. You move.